Welcome, everybody. Today, we're here with Lynn Lyons. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. Lynn Lyons is a nationally recognized speaker, author, and psychotherapist who specializes in the treatment of anxious children and their parents. She has a special interest in interrupting the generational pattern of worry in families and teaching schools and parents how to emotionally equip children in order to prevent the development of anxiety, depression, and other stress-related issues. She is the author of 3 books and numerous articles on anxiety and other mental health issues in children and families. Thanks, Lynn. So I'm so glad you're here with us today. So one of the things that I want to start with is for our audience to have a little bit of a better understanding of how your approach is a little different than the typical therapists that parents might bring their children to for anxiety.
Okay. So first, I think probably one of the main differences is that I don't work with kids alone. So I say to families, if you can drive to your appointment by yourself, you can come to your appointment by yourself. Mm-hmm. And I find, and because anxiety is such a family thing, and I say this jokingly, but it's actually really true. Very, very rarely do I meet an anxious kid who has like these 2 really laid back parents. It just doesn't work that way. And so I really want to equip the parents with the skills they need in order to interrupt the patterns that the anxiety has probably been running the family for a few generations, or at least for 1 generation. So I'm going to include the family from the start. One of the biggest complaints that I get from parents who are in therapy or have had their kids in therapy with somebody, and there they are seeing me, so clearly, you know, there was something. They'll say, nobody told us what to do. Mm-hmm. So I am very concrete in my approach. It is about skill building. And so from the minute you see me, from the minute you come in the door, I'm getting some information, but we're really getting to work very quickly. So I don't do long assessments. I don't say to families, well, I'll meet with you 4 times and then let you know what the plan is. Because anxiety is not very original in its approach. It's actually pretty redundant, which sort of connects to the second way that I'm probably different than a lot of therapists, is that I'm not going to talk a lot or spend a lot of time trying to figure out the content of the worry and why it showed up. So there can be a lot of exploration of sort of like, well, why do you think you're worried about this? Or you're so worried about bees and you've never been stung by a bee. Or gosh, well, you know, she doesn't want us to leave her alone, but we've never abandoned her. There's never been any issues in that way. And really the content, what you're worried about, is really secondary to the process of worry. So what I want to teach families is how do we recognize this worry thing when it shows up and the anxiety thing, and then what do we do to interrupt the pattern? And there's a lot of people who are trying to figure out for themselves or in treatment. There's so much discussion about sort of trying to find the root cause and figure out the content. And especially with things like OCD, that's actually detrimental to good treatment. So that's probably one of the other main ways that I differ.
Yeah. And I love that, because I always think of it as, I remember when I heard you speak and I've read your book and we've done our webinars together, that it's sort of like the feeding the weed of the anxiety. So the more you talk about it, right, it's not. So I love that you say that. So can you give us a couple of examples of, you know, children that you've worked with that maybe how you would work? Oh, did it freeze? If you can give me a couple of examples. A couple of examples of children that you've worked with.
Yeah, Charlotte, I'm gonna move because you keep cutting out, and I know you're not gonna want all these interruptions.
Yep.
And I don't know if you or me, but I'm just going right next to my router.
Okay.
To see if that will help. So here, I'm just in my kitchen now.
Okay.
We'll see. Can you edit this so I can just sort of dive in?
Yep.
Or do you want to start over?
Yep. Nope, go for it.
Okay. And I think maybe if I, let me see if I cut off my video, if that's going to help the connection too.
All right.
So I'm sitting right next so that we'll get the voice.
Okay.
Okay. So some examples, so I'll give you a few examples. one, maybe a little kid, and then maybe a teenager. A young child that I'm working with, and a very typical presentation of some, you know, having a hard time being away from mom, and maybe bedtime fears, and being scared to go off and try new things. And what I'm going to talk about with that little kid is that, and with the parents there, so she's in kindergarten, I do not meet with her alone. The parents need a lot of coaching and a lot of help so that they can continue what we're doing outside of the sessions. But we talk a lot about the worry, and we personify the worry, and we give the worry a name. So, you know, we might name it Sally or Pete, and help her identify so she can recognize when the worry shows up, and what the worry says, and what the worry is going to try and get her to do, and coach her on being able to recognize those moments. So for her, actually, we talk about the moment of goodbye, and that's the tricky part for her. Once she gets to school, or once she gets, you know, goes off to the birthday party, she does really well. But for her, it's that moment of goodbye, and we know that worry is going to show up. We know that worry is going to make her tummy hurt. We know that worry is going to tell her she can't handle it. And then we practice very concretely, and we act it out in my office, how to talk back to the worry when it shows up. And the mom and the dad have a lot of phrases and coaching. The goal is not to accommodate the worry or put the worry in charge, but to be able to recognize it and then have a different response to it. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky for parents, because they're poor, you know, this poor little muffin is in distress. So we're trying to help her, but she gets the hang of it. We have a chart where she keeps track of the times that she talks back to the worry when worry shows up, and she's doing well with it. Yeah. And so that would be sort of an example of a little kid. And then with a teenager, it's really not all that much different, other than we just sort of bump the language up a little bit. For example, I have a few kids right now that I've known for several years, who have just finished their freshman year in college. And so working with them throughout their freshman year, either when they're home on vacation or doing FaceTime or Zoom calls, and really helping them deal with the uncertainty. So one of the things that really keeps anxiety going is its demand for certainty, so that it needs to know it.
Lynn? Lynn?
We work really hard to get rid of the worry rather than learn how to manage it when it shows up.
So Lynn, I think for a sec maybe you cut out, but basically the teenager, can you maybe recap on the teenager?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So with a teenager, and so for example, I'm working with several kids right now that are either finishing high school or that have just finished their freshman year in college, or going through the whole college application process. And the goal with them is to help them tolerate the uncertainty of these new experiences. Mm-hmm. So anxiety's goal is to create certainty. Anxiety's goal is to make sure that it knows exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And what often happens is with teenagers, anxious teenagers, and with parents and with schools, everybody steps in to try and make sure, right, that things are going smoothly, mm-hmm, that we're eliminating the distress, that we're eliminating the problems, and we really want to develop the skills of being able to manage uncertainty. How do we work ourselves? How do you problem solve? How do you tolerate not knowing exactly how it's going to go? Mm-hmm. How do you recognize how worry works? And being able to, again, externalize it and recognize the patterns.
Mm-hmm. I really think that's an important thing that you just brought up in the control piece, what I would call control or limiting, mm-hmm, and sort of giving the kids, sort of feeding it, as I keep saying, or giving them what they can feel good in, and controlling that piece. And I think that maybe you can give an example, because I know you've done this before, where you would maybe help a child or a teenager with pushing that a little bit of, okay, this is your uncertainty, this is your trigger, and this is what we're going to do to sort of build up our confidence towards that trigger and confronting it. Maybe that's my language.
Yeah. So actually, I wouldn't even say that we're going to build up your confidence. And I think that's kind of a mistake that people make, is that they think that you should have confidence.
Right.
It really is being able to... So I want kids to step into situations where the worry is going to show up, and that's oftentimes not all that hard to do. And when the worry shows up, so it's the three X's, right? We're going to expect the worry to show up. We're going to externalize it. So we're going to step back and notice what it says and what its patterns are. And then we're going to experiment by stepping into that situation on purpose and being able to then manage it, which then the result of that is confidence. So one, I think sometimes people have it backwards. They think that you have to develop confidence before you step into a situation. And I really want to normalize the fact that you're going to step into the situation not knowing what's going to happen.
Good point.
Yep. Step into the situation, and then the confidence comes after you've sort of worked your way through it or after you've managed it. Right. So we have to be really careful as parents and as adults working with kids, that we don't try and move in and create certainty and talk about having calm confidence when we really want to promote the opposite. We don't want to promote them being distressed, but we want to promote that you're going to step into the certainty and not know, and that actually is normal.
Right, I was just going to say, and it normalizes what we maybe are trying right. so hard to control. Yeah, that's such a good, and it feels counterintuitive, I think, for many adults dealing with anxious children.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I would love for you to explain, because again, I love this explanation that I've heard you talk about before, and sort of the difference in the brain of the worry and anxiety. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, so worry, we use those terms interchangeably, but there are two different things. Worry is the cognitive process of imagining and thinking about things. So we talk about anticipatory anxiety. And when you're worrying, you're up here in your prefrontal cortex, the most sophisticated part of your brain, and you're imagining, you're what-ifing. Maybe you're thinking about something that you've already done, that you made a mistake, and you're ruminating about that. So that's the whole worry process. Anxiety actually is the response, that the physical response that your body has when your amygdala gets triggered. So you're worrying about something, you're thinking about it, you're imagining it. And that sends a danger message, an uh-oh message, to this amygdala, which is basically the fight or flight part of your brain, which then activates your system to respond as if you're being chased by a grizzly bear. Yeah. So worry is the cognitive process, and anxiety is sort of, you know, what happens is you get juiced up with epinephrine and norepinephrine, and your heart rate goes up, and your pupils dilate. It shuts down non-essential systems in your body. So your digestive system shuts down. Blood is pulled from your extremities. All of this happens really quickly. And when you have this physical response, then you start worrying about the physical response that you don't want to have anymore. So maybe you're worried about getting, you know, you're worried about going on an airplane, but now, oh my gosh, I'm worried that I'm going to get anxious when I get on the airplane.
Yeah.
Your brain does not differentiate between all these things, and you sort of get stuck in this loop of juicing your body up and responding and reacting. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to be able to normalize and recognize all these processes so that you don't have these loops that you get stuck into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the patterns that we create.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
Yeah. And then worry, you know, if you think about worry, and this is the same for depression as well, you think, okay, so what's the story that I'm telling myself?
Yep.
And how am I getting caught up in this narrative that I've created? And sometimes it's not based on anything. Sometimes it might be based on past experience. But how do we pay attention to what we're saying to ourselves? Because our bodies and brains react to the messages that they get. And that's sort of oftentimes how people get stuck.
Yeah, I mean, so many good points. And as I, you know, have experienced, and many of the listeners know, with my youngest daughter and the anxiety, and I can literally, as you're describing the brain, I can watch that happen to her. You know, I mean, it's devastating, but it's, as a parent, to observe in a child that's never had it, but it's also, it's on a brain level, it is a fascinating thing to see that sort of light switch, you know, and it's not always gradual. It can be like that. So it's really, it's always, I think both as a parent and a professional right now, like, you know, talking to you is it's a good reminder, as putting my parent hat on. Which brings me to, if you could just tell, you know, talking to our parents that are listening, and mothers and fathers, something that you would sort of say, hey, this is one thing. If you have an anxious child, these are a few things I would suggest for you to really, you know, do or think about that could be really helpful.
So the number one thing is, you have to be careful how much reassurance you are giving that anxious child when they are stepping into situations that are uncertain. So it doesn't mean that you don't love them and support them, but remember that anxiety is looking for certainty. Mm-hmm. And the biggest mistake that people make is they want to make sure that their child knows everything they need to know ahead of time. So I talk about, you know, be careful not to over. So planning is good and preparing is good, but over planning, over preparing, over talking, over reassuring, over informing, all of that is what I call doing the disorder. We have to allow kids to experience the uncertainty and sometimes the discomfort that comes from not knowing everything ahead of time. And the biggest thing I see parents doing is trying to stay ahead of the worry by giving all of the information, by sort of paving the way, making sure nothing goes wrong, that the schedule is all laid out. And when you do that, you are really making the anxiety disorder worse, rather than thinking about how can I teach my child to tolerate and to handle unexpected things, or even just the normal sort of like, well, I'm not sure what time we're going to get there things. So that would be a huge tip. And then the other thing that we really have to pay attention to is anxiety is really contagious. And the thing that we know, the research is pretty clear about, is that anxious parents model anxious behavior. You don't do it on purpose, but it happens. And you really have to pay attention to how you convey to your child that the world is a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. So using that catastrophic language, you know, using, talking a lot about safety and being careful and, you know, that kind of language is a very common pattern in worried families, that if you tend to be a worrier, you really have to pay attention to your responses in your language. They are watching and listening, and they pick up on that in a pretty dramatic way.
Yeah, good points. So Lynn, just a couple things as we wrap up. I know that because you are so good at what you do, you have a full practice, but can you just share with the audience, if they wanted to learn more about your approach, your books that you've written?
Sure. So the one that we wrote for parents is called Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents. And it talks very directly to parents, you know, sort of the do's and don'ts and how to understand this thing. There are 7 puzzle pieces, we call them. I wrote the book with my pal Reed Wilson. 7 puzzle pieces that we go through that really lay out a plan for parents to interrupt these patterns. And then there's a companion book for tweeners, up until probably, you know, you can read it with your child, probably a 7 or 8 year old would enjoy it. And then up to the age of about 15, where we go through the same plan, but in a more narrative, kid-friendly way. And that's called Playing with Anxiety, Casey's Guide for Teens and Kids.
Well, great. And I know that I have not only had the pleasure of hearing you speak, and also, you know, working with you on the webinars and reading one of your books. It's definitely, they're worth a look and a read. And we also, if you all want to visit our website, wellness-connect.com, we have Lynn's webinars available, a series of 4, and they're fabulous, each an hour. So Lynn, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks, Lynn.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.